and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ethan. This is a show where we talk to creators and fans of actual play podcasts and streams about why they enjoy them. Hey, Lauren.
Yeah?
What's your favorite classical JRPG?
Ooh. So, story about Lauren. She hasn't played a lot of classical JRPGs because I was a Nintendo kid.
There were a lot of classical JRPGs in Nintendo.
Not for the Nintendo 64, which was my first console.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it had already switched over to PlayStation by then. So I haven't played a lot of classical JRPGs, or really any, but I'm almost through Final Fantasy IV, and which I would have been told is the best first Final Fantasy to play, and I have been enjoying that.
That's the one with Cecil, right?
Cecil and the twins and Tella and the Spoony Bard. That one's fun.
I've always loved Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, it's got a very good cast of very fun characters. And two, it has my favorite villain who actually wins halfway through the story, and the second half of the game is you just fixing the problem.
Huh. Interesting.
Which, you don't get that very often, where the bad guy actually does a win.
Also, you just spoiled Final Fantasy VI for me, so I guess I don't need to play it anymore.
The game's been out for, like, 30,000 years.
I mean, I know, but I just told you that I've never played it before.
Were you going to?
I mean, maybe.
I mean, you still should.
You told me it was your favorite. Good. Now at the story. Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm sure there's lots of other big surprises and things.
Speaking of classic JRPGs, this week we're talking about The Promise Tree with Jess. Hello.
Hi, Jess.
Hi.
So tell us about The Promise Tree.
It's so gosh darn wholesome. It's so sweet. It makes me so happy. It's one of those games that I saw and I was immediately like, wait, what system is this? When can I play it? How does it work? Like, it's such a great group and it's so cute and I can't recommend it enough.
So what system are they actually using?
So they're using Ryutama, which is a system that's very focused on like story and adventure. It's very cute. Like the characters you sort of play all have very sort of like basic roles. They're not necessarily like, you know, like a paladin or a skilled thief or something like that. It's like a farmer or a craftsperson or like it's very basic and cute. And the general premise is that everyone in this world sort of like at least once in their life goes off on like a little adventure. It's very encouraged to go around and do stuff. So this is a group where this is like they were friends as kids. Some of them have already gone off adventuring a little bit. Some of them have been home, but they promise to meet at their precious tree in like 1 year's time type thing and meet back up and then go on an adventure together. That's how it starts. And it's just good.
That sounds so lovely and wholesome.
Yeah.
It also sounds very like old school JRPG thing, which I know was one of the inspirations for the show, right? Was to bring that like old school Secrets of Mana. What's the other one that's not Secrets of Mana?
Children of Mana.
Maybe no, it is Secrets of Mana. I was thinking about something else, but Secrets of, there's a tree in that one, right?
I think so. I mean, there's
probably like Tales of Phantasia.
Yeah.
Like those stories about kids doing cute things and grown up and...
Yeah, even Legend of Zelda, like there was that...
I mean, there's a big tree in Legend of Zelda.
There's a big tree in Legend of Zelda and it's sick, they gotta fix it. Like, Link's gotta protect it. And Link's just a little kid. But yeah, these guys are like, they have their precious tree where they want to meet up. And the other cool thing in Ryutama is that the dungeon master can have the GM type person can have a role in the game as a dragon, like Ryutama, I believe means like dragon egg. And then the Ryujin is the dragon person, or the GM person sort of like leading the story and stuff like that. So we get to see like the GM in that one is Jess. It's weird for me to say because my name is also Jess.
Jess, little cup of Joe.
Little cup of Joe, Jess.
Yes, friend of the show, actually. She came to talk to us about Wonder Quest.
Really?
So aww, listeners will recognize her.
That's awesome. Yeah, so she gets to actually like not only tell the story and narrate it, but appear in it as I believe she's a blue dragon in this one. She's so bananas amazing. She really sets the tone for what this story is. Like, you want her to just keep telling you about this world. It's so good. You want her to tell you this story. It's so amazing. She's so lovely. And yeah, when they go back to the tree, I believe their Ryujin presents herself to them. Or they know of her. Like, they know of this dragon person. Like, it's just a cool, yes, magical world. It's a cool, magical, happy world where, like, good stuff exists. Like, I think I was just really excited for it because I love, like, D&D obviously introduced me to TTRPGs, but, like, I'm tired of, like, all these sad stories and no one, like... No one goes out adventuring without, like, some sad backstory. And I just wanted happy. And, like, for a period of time, I literally, in D&D games I was playing, I was like, I'm going to write a character with a happy backstory. I'm going to do it. You can't stop me. And then I saw, like, this. And I was like, wait, everyone's happy in this one.
I love how your rebellious spirit comes out. I want to be happy.
I mean, I feel like that's a big mood.
It's a big statement.
In, like, role-playing games in general, like, even more than just D&D. Like, there are so many games that are just, like, explore the depths of human terribleness.
Mm-hmm. I've said this on, like, Twitter and stuff. 2019 is the year of wholesome content.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Give it to me.
I love it.
I want it all.
Yeah.
Which Ryutama is actually like,
yes,
top of the list. It's, yes, that's a very good system. I have the book right here. Yes. I'm looking at it. It's on my forehead.
I didn't think to go and grab mine, but yeah, it's gorgeous. It's such a nice book. It's such a cute system.
It's so pretty.
It's so, and like, it's not to say that like Dark and Broody is bad, because it's not. Like, literally the two main books I knew going into PAX U, I was picking up. I was like, I'm picking up Ryutama because I need this. But then I also picked up Bluebeard's Bride, which is like opposite end of the spectrum.
What I think it is like those more sad and depressing games are very tiring. Mm-hmm. And when you have nothing but them, mm-hmm, you just get tired. Mm-hmm. You're just, ugh. Mm-hmm. I have all this weight on my heart. Yeah. And you need certain things like Ryutama or Golden Sky Stories is a good example as well of just nice, wholesome games to just like bring you back up to a buoyancy point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Especially with the shift in like all games, I mean, or in tabletop community, because even people are playing, shift towards narrative, because even people playing D&D, which is 100% a narrative game, but you can play it a little more like a word game. Mm-hmm. But people in general are now more interested in playing these like narrative stories and having a lot of high buy-in with role play and stuff. And if you are really committing to the story and to your character and to the role play, gosh, that's so much, you know, to intentionally be like, okay, every week or every 2 weeks, I'm going to be this traumatized person. Because that's what a lot of backstories are. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot to do with like, who is the kind of person who would leave their house to go slay monsters?
Mm-hmm. Someone who's really excited about punching monsters.
Yeah, someone who's either really excited about punching monsters or somebody who's had some terrible, like, who's going to go against the evil wizard? Someone with nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. And that creates a very specific kind of backstory. But it's, yeah, it can be really tiring. What I like about Ryutama is that there is magic and there is fighting and stuff, but you can, the farmer class, you just get animals. Yeah. You just get 3 animals that you can take with you.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have to worry about them dying or trying to protect them like every Beastmaster Ranger in every D&D game. Like, they're your friends.
I think one of the important notes to that is, because you mentioned D&D, it's like, who would go adventuring? It's people with nothing to lose. Ryutama assumes that everyone goes on adventure once in their life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like that's a core concept of the game. I think it's in like the first couple of pages that just everyone goes on an adventure. So you can just be a normal person, or you could be a happy person. You can be anyone, because you don't have to come up with a reason why you're going adventuring. It's just something you do.
Yeah. Yep. Which is very good. Which is
great.
I love that. And like you said, yeah, I love that premise. And I like, because for a long time, I only ever played D&D. It was the only one I knew. And like that, I literally would struggle to be like, I want a backstory with like a happy reason. And it was like, usually like, oh, you know, the call of adventuring, the call of like interest, like intrigue, stuff like that. But not like, and you know what? Guess what? My whole family's together. No one's dead. Take that. Ha ha. stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like you said, like, I love that the premise in this world is that everyone does it. And another like just sweet happy point to me is that stories in this world, going on adventures in this world, benefits the world, because there's like these big world dragons who eat stories, like not in a bad way. They don't make them disappear. It just feeds them and makes the whole world a bigger, more beautiful place. Like, what? That's so great. Like, it's so cute and sweet, and I love it. Like, you're encouraged to, like, the people in this world, like, go out, have adventures, like, do fun stuff. Like, everything you do makes our world a bigger, more diverse, more interesting place. Like, what a beautiful premise.
Yeah, it's very, like, go out and learn about the world. And Ryutama, this past couple episodes, we've just been like, Ryutama's the best game.
I think it's because we've all been reading Ryutama.
Yeah, because we've all been reading Ryutama. But like, that book is just an enjoyable read. You read it, and then all of a sudden, there's the Ryujin, the big world dragon that you meet. But then there's also like the weather dragons and the mushroom dragons. Yes. And there are little pages with little sketches of these dragons. And you're like, I love this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's such a, you feel good reading it.
Yeah.
It's fun and interesting to read in more ways than like, I just need to learn how to play this game. Like the spells, the flavor text for the spells is the most wonderful, wholesome thing.
I also love that you have to do spell chants.
Yeah, I'm bad at those though, so I hate that you have to do spell chants, but I love the idea of spell chants.
Yeah, that's very fair. But it's so cute. It's trying to like get you into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so sweet. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like it's you said, even just the dragons, like even I was like showing the book to someone who I know is not going to play it with me, but I was just like, look at these dragons. And like, even they were like, oh my God, look at that one. Look at that one. Look at that one. Like, they're so wonderful. Like you said, like there's one for like the forest dragon, the mountain dragon, the mushroom dragon, whatever. Like there's so, the different weather dragons, the different, oh gosh, they're so great.
Gosh, Ryutama. What a quality system.
Yeah.
So.
Not sponsored by Ryutama.
No, not sponsored by Ryutama. Hashtag not sponsored. Hashtag Ryutama if you would like to sponsor us. we still probably wouldn't accept that, honestly, but. Tell us about the characters in Promise Tree and kind of what happened, like what was the inciting incident? Where did they decide to go on their adventure?
I literally gasped when you were like, mentioned the characters. I love them so much. So like I mentioned, I think a good thing to consider with like Ryutama is, like I said, there's different dragons. The Ryujin for this one is a blue dragon. So that means the story, in fact, is supposed to focus on the flavor of it is friendship, love, family. Like, so once again, we were talking about like, oh, it's so great, so happy. You can run a darker story in Ryutama. There is the black dragon, which focuses on like suspense and conspiracy and betrayal. Like that's still an option. But the game runs differently. It's so cute and fun. And in this one, our friendships, the power of friendship and magic and love, which, oh gosh, I feel like some people might think that sounds so cheesy, but it's so wonderful.
It's so wonderfully cheesy.
Oh,
it's really important, you know? Like, it's a really nice, I don't know, just like listening right now. Think about your friends.
Yeah.
Think about how wonderful they are and think about how you feel when you're around them.
Yeah.
Like, that's good. And we should have more of that.
Yeah.
We should encourage it.
Yes. Yeah. So in this one, our four good friends, our four good adventure kids are Mildew, Trill, Griffin, and Rue. I have to like put this out there immediately because I'm sorry I'm biased, but Rue is my favorite.
Because
I might have an obsession with like deer and antlers and like that cute sweetness. And Rue is like a little adorable deer folk. Like she's a wonderful, sweet little, oh gosh, like earth-loving muffin. I love her so, she's so cute. She's so happy, so sweet. And basically, she's the one that, like, stayed in town. Like, everyone else was already off doing stuff, but Rue stayed in town and was, like, taking care of their tree. Taking care of their tree for them while they work on, and taking care of all the plants in the gardens and stuff like that. We have Mildew, who is, like I was saying, everyone's, like, a basic sort of class. Mildew's, like, a merchant, but he's, like, a traveling bookseller. He has a flying donkey friend. who travels around with him, who carries all the books for his little traveling sort of library. Pighead, that's his name, Pighead, which is a very apt name for a, you know, a donkey, like, who doesn't always do what you say. He's kind of pigheaded. That's Pighead for you. But they're very cute, very sweet together. Oh, and like I said, everyone is seasonal themed. So Rue is, like, summer, I believe, and Mildew is winter. So Mildew's actual head constantly has snow falling from it, which is such, once again, just this flavor is so good. We have Trill, who I think is spring, literally named after. They started the campaign asking people what their favorite flower was. And I remember this because Trill was like, "Welp, I'm called out. My name is Trill, short for Trillium." which, once again, this is the sweetness I needed in my life. Every moment of watching this was just like me squeeing. Trill is just this wonderful, powerful, like, you expect her to have like a magical girl transformation at any moment. So great. And then is wonderfully sort of juxtaposed, not exactly, complimented by Griffin, who's like the traditional hero type. Like, you imagine him, like, always sort of like winking at girls and like just like making a show of things, like feel of like an anime magic boy who's full of himself, but not in a bad way, not in a like, not in a mean or rude way, just fun and happy and good. And I think he's sort of like the autumn season, so like another wonderful thing about this. Oh gosh, just the flavor. Like I said, like the way they each have magic. They each sort of have a season. They each have sort of like a type. And it's so great. And they all complement each other so wonderfully. And like, Griffin is the one, everyone else is back waiting at the tree. Where's Griffin? Like, you know, Griffin shows up late with Starbucks, like, type thing. But yeah, like the hero type. And I don't know, just the four of them together. It's so, oh my god, they complement each other so well, and they're so good, and they're so sweet, and they're all such happy adventure children, and I love them all.
What's really nice about this formula is that they are all friends, mm-hmm. and so many adventure stories in different role-playing games, or even in the JRPGs that you know, that these are based off of, is that you start with, like, one person, and then you meet another person, and then half of the game is, like, learning about is them like coming together and becoming a family, and this whole kind of like found family trope, but you see it forming in real time. Whereas with this game, there's all this backstory, there's all this history of them being friends together. And so instead, you still kind of get this found family story, but it's different because they're starting from already loving each other.
Yes.
And going on from there. You know, there's not that conflict of like, why am I with you? Oh, we just have to do this one thing together. And that's what's making us, you know, that's why we're putting up with each other. It's they all really, really love each other and care about each other, which I don't think you see that a lot in adventure stories.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny that you should say that, because you just literally reminded me that probably the first time I did that, like what you called rebelling against the traditional D&D sort of character archetype and stuff like that, was I was invited into a game by a DM who was like, hey, I'm gonna have like an awesome all-girl squad team, and you guys are all gonna start together as like little kid adventurers, and you guys are gonna like age up together. And it just, you just reminded me of that like that was one of the really fun ones for me, because we got to start as kids together. We literally did a bunch of like, you know, little kid training sequences, like school sequences type things. And it was just that, despite the fact that the world was still a pretty dark world, there was an inherent sweetness to us being these childhood best friends finally going off together on adventures. And the Promise Tree does that, but with the wonderful system of Ryudama. And it's so, oh, it's just so good. Like I recommend it to anyone, because like you guys said, I think there's a lot of fun to be had in like dark sequences. Like there's a lot of, you know, you can like work through feelings, you can do a lot of like with some darker stuff, with some fun stuff, you can work through different emotions and you can do that, but it's also draining. And there's something really nice about having an ongoing happy thing too in your life. Like
totally yeah. And I want to make it clear that like we all like D&D. I mean, we compare things a lot to D&D sometimes in a negative light because D&D is really big and everybody plays it. But, like, D&D is really good for a specific kind of story. For a lot of specific kind of stories, honestly. It's very versatile. But, like, the thrust of Ryutama is just so different.
And I think, like you're saying, like, you always go back to D&D because for a lot of times it's a starting point. It's a jumping off point. It's a point where, like, a lot of people, it was their first game. And, like, you continue to play it and do other things. And, like, we could just as easily compare to something like I said, Bluebeard's Bride is another thing I picked up and I'm so interested in, even though it's extremely dark, it's extremely opposite. Or like The Spire is another, like, it's pretty dark. Like, there's a lot of games. Blades in the Dark. There's so many other games you could point to and be like, this one's like a little bit like there's room for some darkness in this. There's a lot. And that's great too. But
I think it's like a quantity over quality thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas there's so much about conflict resolution. And when people think, because that's a lot of what drives a tabletop RPG, right, is conflict. And when you think conflict, you automatically think of often violence, either interpersonal violence or physical violence or violence, you know, of the world against you. Like, there's always that kind of, it's harsher and darker and more violent. Whereas conflict can be like, I have to cross this raging river and I'm not sure how.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting because I'm sitting here thinking about you talking about this. One thing that Ryutama does is that conflict often is just traveling.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of just going from place to place in Ryutama and you have to make travel checks and camping checks and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Which means that it's not really as much like you fighting against something. It's you just going somewhere, which is a conflict, but it's not, there's not super high stakes. There's, you know, lots of chance for conversation. And, you know, sometimes there's because when you fail a travel checks, like an event happens and you're like, oh no, there's an intense moment, but it's not in like the heat of battle or in an animated disagreement. It's just, oh no, I tripped. Which shares a lot of themes with our other favorite game, Mouse Guard.
Yes.
Which has a lot of the same things, because a lot of people think Mouse Guard is a game about, you know, happy little mice, when in reality it's actually about, like, really intense, like, mice with swords stuff. But in that system, there's also that same sort of feel where there's a lot of traveling, there's a lot of conflicts with things that aren't strictly violence.
Yeah, and they're all treated the same kind of way, which is sort of true of Ryutama. I mean, they have a whole, like,
they have a very fun combat system.
Mm-hmm. They have a very fun combat system.
The thing about, and this is just a JRPG thing, they only ever fight monsters. You don't typically fight people unless they're a boss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unless they're a villain. Otherwise, it's typically monsters. Mm-hmm. There's not that, like, in D&D when you fight orcs. Mm-hmm. Those orcs were people, right?
Yeah.
But when you're fighting, like, slime monsters, you don't think about the moral consequences of that. It's just like, oh no, these are just, like, these are literal Heartless from Kingdom Hearts.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. And, like, it's just a difference of what you want to examine. Because there have been lots of, and especially, like, D&D is really great for examining, hey, these orcs are people with a society, and, like, what right do you have to call them a monster? And that's really interesting, but it's a lot heavier. And so, you know, if you want to, but yeah, in Ryutama, you're like, you're fighting these slimes. You're fighting, you know, these, like, big, giant JRPG rats. that want to hurt you.
Yep.
But what I think is really interesting about Promised True specifically is the way that they handle violence, right? Because they, as far as I know, try very hard not to have any kind of lasting, like, they try very hard not to harm the people that they're fighting, right? Like, they're always knocking things out or scaring the rats away. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that seems accurate. And I think it's very appropriate to the flavor of their game in particular, what we know of, like, you know, the characters they play, what has been unfolded to us as, like, what's happening in that world. It just makes sense. You wouldn't always just, like, do a murder. Like, you wouldn't always just, like, Like, unlike in D&D where, like, you're saying, I get that a lot of times, like, sometimes it's really fun to play with the lines of gray, you know what I mean, not to have things every black and white, but sometimes it's nice to just have it easy and just have the monsters and also have it where, like, you know, and you can kind of just declare that, you know, that you're not doing things to murder, like, you're not just walking up to stab someone and be done. You're like, if there's an issue, you're trying to resolve it. You're like, I think in one of the last episodes, they had a big bad to fight, and they did in fact fight them, but then they went and, like, turned them in. Like, they didn't just murder them. They're like, okay, well, you're beaten now. You're beaten. You're gonna come with us. That's what's happening now. We are resolving this together now. This is how we're doing this. Like real people.
One of my favorite D&D characters was a wizard who I did my best to sleep anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, any, like, living sentient creature. I'm like, all right, we got him low. Sleep him. Just like Pokemon catch everybody. Take him to the authorities. Like, we captured all the bandits and, like, because this was Lost Mines of Phandelver. Uh-huh. So we captured, like, the wizard that lives inside the basement of the old manor. Mm-hmm. We just captured everybody. Like, that was the mini game we played.
Yeah. Gotta catch all the bad guys.
Let's fill up our crime-a-dex.
Yep.
Which is, like, I think that's really interesting, because sometimes you hear about, like, in more traditional adventure stories, like, don't rely on the city guard. If you're just going to rely on the city guard, then we don't need to play this game. You know, like, if you're just going to get the guards to do everything. Or the city guard is often very inept. To, like,
that's a different problem.
Make room for the fact that you are supposed to be the heroes of the story. Mm-hmm. And so I do like the idea that, like, you're just, like, the city guard isn't inept. You're just in places where the city guard can't be doing things that, mm-hmm. that they can't do, you know? But you aren't arbiters of justice. Like, yes. You do not decide
yep.
who lives and who dies.
Yep. I think that in Ryutama, once again, it really makes sense, because when you're reading about that history of the world in which it's really encouraged for people to go out and adventure, part of it that is explained is that it's very common that while you're adventuring, for people to help you, feed you, provide you with, like, shelter, but in exchange they are going to ask favors. And it's very common for small towns, like you're talking about a city guard and stuff like that. It's like, it's a little world of regular people. They don't all have city guards everywhere. Like, so sometimes they're like, hey, some adventurers are in our town for a change. Like, you guys are out adventuring. Could you go check on this, like, weird rat situation for us? It's not something that we're really, like, keen on doing, but if you do that for us, we'll, like, help you out. And it's like, yeah, this is what you're supposed to be doing in that year of adventuring, is, like, going out, exploring the world, experiencing different things, and helping others and having them help you. And, like, gosh, that's so great.
Yeah. I like the idea that, because this always, like, made me feel weird about JRPGs, when you can just walk into people's houses and talk to them and take their stuff. So I've invented this headcanon in all the games I play, that those chests that you can just walk in and take are, like, unless you're playing a game like Chrono Trigger, mm-hmm. they are, like, offerings for, mm-hmm. you just put your extra stuff in so that when an adventurer comes to town, they're like, oh yeah, I could take this. It's like a take a penny, leave a penny, but it's like a potion. Like, take a potion, leave a potion kind of thing. Like,
that's awesome. And it actually sounds like that fits into what I think is the nice flavor of this story. Like, I feel like that works really well, and I'd never thought of it before, and I'm gonna console myself in future games with that.
Yeah, they know what they're about.
Take a potion, leave a potion.
Yeah. And, you know, that happens. It's just like, it's like leaving, you know, something, a couch on your curb saying free.
Yeah.
That is something they should cover in Ryutama, because they have the dragon statues.
Yep.
That it has, each dragon statue has a walking stick.
Yes.
And you can take it if you're having a trouble time on the road. But if you ever come across a dragon statue without a walking stick, you're supposed to put yours there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I love that premise. I love that premise so much. And like you're saying, it's like a take a penny, leave a penny jar. But I feel like even beyond that, like, think about your character in a video game. Think about these like little adventurers coming through town. You're already kind of helping the town out if you're killing all the monsters around them. You know what I mean? Now the next time they go to travel that road, it's a little safer. Like, mm-hmm. you've helped them out, and they help you by being like, oh gosh, I have like 6 robes in my closet. Pfft, here, here's what I need to, I need to scale back. I'm going to throw it in the adventurer chest. I need to get rid of that.
Just the donation box.
Yeah, basically.
It's like, for it's adventurers. Like Marie Kondo in a JRPG. If it doesn't spark joy, put it in the adventurer chest.
I love this so much.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I was going to say something and then I thought of my hilarious Marie Kondo joke.
It was a good one. But I also really liked you guys, you were talking about how sometimes just traveling is an adventure, and like that's very true. Like traveling is a big focus of this game. Like when you wake up in the morning, you have to do a condition check. Like mm-hmm. how, like that, there's, that's such an interesting system to me. Like you roll, and like I feel like some people listening to this or first hearing about Ryutama might be like, oh, it's so like, man, it's, there's no consequences and everyone's just happy and what's the point? But no, just waking up for the day to head out on the road, you have to like wayfind and you have to see if you're even up to traveling, because you know, you might not be, like maybe it was raining, maybe you're sickly now, like maybe something happened. Yeah. And like the condition check, you can fumble it. Like fumbling is a thing in this game, where when you're rolling your dice, if you roll, I think it's 2 ones, you're, oh man, you're in bad, you're in a bad place.
You can have a character in Ryutama that like if they consistently fail their condition checks, like they're just gonna have a bad time.
Yeah,
they're gonna be grumpy, they're not gonna be as effective.
No,
like you're not going to be able to travel as much.
Yeah, enemies hit them easier. Like there's a whole bunch of negatives to it. Like, so it's not like this game is just like, oh, you know, nothing bad ever happens. Like, no, there's still stuff. And even like with the traveling, another big thing, like I was mentioning one of the last episodes of Promise Tree, one of the last things, they had a really hard time crossing a bridge. And it was like amazing. It was
a lot of fun.
But, like, it also produced such magical moments and just really good visuals. And, like, it really benefited the story. And it might sound like, oh, I'm crossing a bridge. But no, it was great.
It's really interesting the way that different systems can support that kind of play. Because I'm thinking about, like, Friends at the Table,
mm-hmm.
the podcast that we did. And Anna, who is actually a character on Promise Tree, player on Promise Tree, she plays Rue.
Rue, yeah.
But Anna was telling us this story about like just get on the boat because in that story or whatever system they were playing that episode, getting on the boat is the least interesting part of that adventure. Like just get on the boat, you know, just cross the bridge. But in a game like Ryutama, crossing a bridge can be really, really like that can be the whole adventure is crossing a bridge.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. Like I'm like being very vague because I don't want to spoil, but like there's several moments where like it's both like you're holding your breath for them, or like they have, like I said, sort of a visual or a moment where you're like, oh gosh, they're doing that hilarious like story stereotype, you know what I mean? There's like this oh, they're doing that sequence now, oh my gosh, I could just imagine it. Like it's so,
yeah, it's like very relying really heavily on like story beats and tropes,
mm-hmm.
that are always there. And if you embrace that, if you embrace the cliches,
yes,
then you can have a really good time with them.
Oh, it was very fun. And it, and like you could tell both the audience watching it and the characters who sort of had to watch while other characters were in danger were kind of just like having a both a good laugh and a big concern for it. It was like, oh gosh, oh gosh, oh no, oh no, oh no. Like, but it was so great.
You know, it's cool that you don't want to spoil that stuff.
Well, I don't know. Like, how do you guys feel about that?
I mean, you can spoil it if you want. You can spoil it if you don't want. It's totally up to you and your level of comfort. But my question was, why are they going on this adventure other than like they just got to go on the adventure? Like, where do we know at this point where they're going or why they're doing it?
Yeah, well, I think they were meeting up at their tree anyway. Like I said, some of them were already off. Like basically all of them except for Rue. Rue was still at home. Rue's like the sweet herbalist healer type person. Like I said, taking care of their tree, taking care of the gardens. But meanwhile, like, you know, Griffin's off being a hero and Trill is off being a wonderful magical girl and Mildew is off getting snowy hair and selling books, apparently. But they all meet back at their tree and I'm not sure. I don't actually remember now if they were already planning. I feel like they probably were already planning to go off an adventure, but some, like, intrigue happens. Basically, their tree gets attacked. Like, they get back to their tree and, like, there's all these, like, evil soldier-type people there. And that's the first time we get to see combat, actually. And like you were saying, with the combat system is really interesting because they get to use items. Like, they basically have to declare items that are on the field and then they can use them for bonuses and benefits. And that can be absolutely amazing and hilarious because you can propose all sorts of things. But yeah, so basically, and their tree gets taken, if that's the right word for it.
This is a question I've always had. How do you steal a tree?
Well, I don't know. They gotta go find out, don't they?
Wait, so they go to the tree and it's not there? Like, they're just like, poof, goodbye, tree?
Yeah, the tree's gone.
No, they get to the tree and there's evil soldiers there. They fight the evil soldiers and then there's no tree.
Okay. But yeah. but it's like where there once was a tree is yeah, now. Yeah,
and
it's
not, and we're not talking a small tree here. We're not talking a little baby shrub. We're talking like an ancient, like big, amazing, like the kind of tree that like takes your breath away and you're like, oh, let's multiple of us try and get our arms around this thing. Nope, it's too big. Like, it's like this amazing tree and it's gone. It's gone now. So they gotta go find their tree and fight these evil soldiers. And like, who are these evil soldiers? What happened to their tree? Like, these are all questions we need to answer.
I remember correctly, like, the main antagonist is like this arcanotech sword arm fancy pants.
Yeah, it's definitely a fancy boy. It's definitely, I mean, it's definitely in the flavor of the story for it to be a fancy boy.
That is very much Little Cup of Joe's brand.
Yeah.
It's just like fancy, probably very attractive villains. I'm actually looking at a picture of some art that she drew of them right now. But yeah, just like very, very, yeah, those classic like anime fancy pants villains for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, just like the long flowing hair, big sword, like, yeah, basically like probably shiny in some ways, like.
Just sparkles everywhere.
And yeah. The other thing with Promise Tree, oh my gosh, go off and watch it for all the reasons I've already mentioned, but also Jess Little Cup of Joe is an amazing voice actress, just amazing. And both in terms of narrating the story, you just want her to keep going. Every voice she does is completely different and you feel it for the character. You're like, oh, that's that character. Like, that's for sure that character. Like, Jess is like the sort of DM other DMs are envious of. She's so skilled and so amazing. Like,
Ethan and I have both been lucky enough to be GM'd by Jess, and she is a very, very good GM.
Yeah, for sure.
We just like zipped through this. I love interviews like this. I love where you're just like,
oh wow, it's already
I don't have to answer. I don't, yeah, oh wow, I don't know. I feel like you've answered all of these questions.
I can talk more if there's anything specifically you want to talk about. Like,
tell us a little bit about, I'm interested to hear about this bridge scenario. So walk us through a little bit about the bridge.
Okay. So it's the sort of thing where if you're watching as a third party, if you're not involved and you're just watching, you're kind of like if this was a show on TV, you would be yelling at the TV. You'd be like, oh my gosh, do this, check that, be careful, like, oh my god, guys. And so they do some very logical things, like they send the smallest, lightest person.
Yeah, like, why is the bridge hard to cross, first of all?
Well, it's the sort of thing, okay, firstly, it's the kind of bridge that overhangs just a giant drop. Like, it's one of those big rope bridges with like planks on the center, like very like tropey, gonna break cliff bridge. Like you know it. Like, it's so good.
It might as well just say that on the front. Like, this bridge will break.
I mean, depending on your story and character importance, this bridge will break and drop you. Like,
you don't want to be the last person on this bridge.
Yes, exactly. NPCs not encouraged to go across this bridge.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you're currently wearing a red shirt, don't do it. Like, type thing. But yeah, so it's that sort of thing. And they do, like, think about it. They do discuss it. They send the latest person across, makes it across. You know, that they sort of go through that and they get to a point where I think the third person crosses. It happens. The thing you expect to happen happens. The bridge fails, and there's that amazing trope of like, oh, nick of time. Luckily, this person is carrying, their main weapon is a pole arm. So it gets like, you know, it gets caught and they don't fall all the way. They do that. And then they're debating, like, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? Like, you know what I mean? It's the sort of thing where you as a player, you guys are, like, discussing, you're figuring it out, you're working as quickly as possible, but you know also sort of, like, in showtime, it's only been a few seconds, you know what I mean? Like, this is all happening so quickly as you're rolling, as you're figuring out, as you're debating, and everyone's doing stuff. And then they have a very good sort of, like, I think they might have even said it on stream. I think they might have, or maybe it was the chat, but, like, people were, like, there's sort of like a Tarzan and Jane moment of like swinging on the ropes to get, like, they see they're like, the narrator tells you there's a, just off to the side from where the bridge is hanging, there's a hole in the wall, like in the cliff, right? There's like a catch point you can get to if you just get there type thing. Like, gotta swing that bridge, gotta like do that, you know, in a video game, which what would be like hitting the buttons at exactly the right point moment, like,
yeah,
quick time events.
Don't they cut one half of the bridge and then swing to the hole?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's sort of what they do. Like, the last person remaining on the other side's like, I got this, I'm gonna save us both and fix this scenario, and sort of like, yeah, cuts it and like sends, because yeah, so basically like someone's like hanging there by their pole arm and then I'm gonna cut this and swing us over there, this is an excellent plan.
nothing will go wrong
at all, and it's not, we don't need to be concerned at all that people in the future will never be able to get back across this get to this city they need to get to. Not a problem. That's a problem for future, you know, future groups of people.
Yeah, I think one of the other really great things about Ryutama in that situation, in another system that could have gone very badly if roles fail, but in Ryutama, the Ryujin wants the players to succeed. And so they have all of these tools to help them. Whereas like, if there was a failed roll and somebody goes plummeting down the chasm, the Ryujin can just be like, nope, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're rewinding to a point where that didn't happen, and you can't just try again, but you can do something in a different way.
Yeah, because the Ryujin in Ryutama, they're a character too. Like, the GM is like, they get moments of both hands-on and hands-off sort of stuff with the story and the characters and stuff like that, and it's so cool. And like I was saying about how in this world, like, one of the cool things about the lore in this world is that there's like there's all those little cute dragons we talked about, and they're not even little, they're still big, like the mountain dragon, the forest dragon, the whatever, but then there's like the upper level dragons, and those are the ones you're feeding with your story, and your Ryujin kind of is like a dragon assistant person, and they're capturing, they're like, they're standing by, oh my god, and in the book there's this adorable art of like the Ryujin sort of like hiding behind a rock while the adventurers do something and like taking notes of like the story they're doing right now. And so like what you say is there's really fun flavor to be had in GM intrusions in this game, because it's literally the Ryujin or the dragon person who's sort of watching them and recording their adventure, and they can like change the story, like they can help them out or like do other stuff like that. It's so weird and neat. Like, it's
what I found interesting about all those things that the Ryujin can do are a lot of things that GMs do anyway behind the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, okay, so they're not doing so good. I'm gonna fudge this dice.
Yeah.
But as a Ryujin, you actually have, like, a pool, like, a system where that's codified, where you're like, okay, I can fudge dice this many times. Or rewinding time.
All of a sudden, this monster has 25 less hit points. Oh, look, you killed it! Like, but it's, yeah, it's all kind of above ground. You know, the Ryujin says, like, I'm using this benediction.
Yep. Pshew. Yeah, like, I think the book even gives an example or something like that of, like, the Ryujin coming in and, like, making someone's animal companion suddenly able to help, like, suddenly they, like, show up with a scroll in their mouth that explains something, or, like, they can help them in these, like, really, they can, like, sort of, like, change the environment around them or, like, the things around them and, like, help them out, and it makes sense. It's not, like, a weird, cheaty thing. And like you said, like, GMs often hedge things behind the screens anyway. In this way, the GM gets to have a fun interactive way. They can actually like appear and talk to the party if they so want. Like, I think it declares like maybe down the road you might want to like inspire them in this way, or you can just have, you know, this, I don't know, this NPC suddenly do this, or this animal suddenly do this, or you know what I mean, or magic can just happen.
Time literally reverses.
Yeah, like wah, like backward. Oh, we're back up. Cool.
Is it time for the final question?
I think it might be time for the final question.
Oh gosh, this sounds ominous.
Yes. It's not ominous. You can take as much time as you want answering it. My favorite thing is asking this question and then just the silence after. Fill in the blank. If you like blank, you'll like promise tree.
Oh. Okay, this is not like 100% true. This is not like, but it's just very on my mind. And Ethan, you brought it up earlier. Like, I started playing Kingdom Hearts 3 because I've been waiting like 15 years for this game, to be fair. And I literally heard someone the other day, like a big streamer, talking about Kingdom Hearts and saying how they'd played a few hours of it and they didn't intend to play it anymore and they didn't like it. What they didn't like about it is that it was too magical. It was too friendship will save us. It is too, like, you know, the power of good in our hearts and like stuff like that. And I'm like, okay. I respect your opinion and I totally get that. But for me, that's what I want. Like, I love that. Like, I want that. Like, if there's something out there, like, there's a number of, like, if you love, you know, a lot of magical girl animes where, like, things are going bad and then at the last moment, like, the day is saved by love and friendship. Like, I'm sorry, that might sound cheesy, but sometimes it's what you want. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's what you need.
We're all about that here.
The Promise Tree? You might not know it, but it's what you need sometimes. Like, it might not be your all-the-time favorite thing, even though it's mine. But sometimes you need a good thing like the Promise Tree in your life. You just, it's good for you. It's good, wholesome, happiness, RPG medicine, and I can't recommend it enough. And yeah, if you like I said, some of the cheesy anime magic, if you like, you know, the happiness of, like, saving the day in Kingdom Hearts with the power of friendship. If you like crazy, magical happiness to happen, like, that's this. If you like just sweet adventures with friends, gosh, what else? Like, what? I'm trying to think of anything else. Like, if you're not, like, if you watch Disney stuff, and aren't and aren't just like, ugh, that's garbage, that doesn't happen. Like, I get that doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes I want it, okay? Like,
yeah. Sometimes that's what I want to happen.
Listen. Then yeah, you know what, if you want that, like, good happy content sometimes, and even if you don't think you want it, but sometimes you just need it.
Promise tree.
Yes. Sometimes you just need it, okay?
Like, just fill your heart up.
Yeah, yeah. Just yeah, refill your heart batteries. Like, mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta put a lot of, like, emotional labor out there, and sometimes you need to refill that gauge. You know, your spell slots, your spoons, your happiness battery. The Promise Tree will fill it back up.
Awesome. So if people want to check out The Promise Tree, where can they do that?
So The Promise Tree plays on Joe's channel, who we've mentioned several times. Look up a Joe. Follow her on Twitter. Also, if you follow her on Twitch, that's where you can get notifications of when it's going live. But they generally play on Sundays in what is the afternoon to me, like a little, or the afternoon sort of PST, EST, that sort of time range. Yeah, so it's twitch.tv, Little Cup of Joe. The players are M, Ori Truffery, Anna Landress, Nicholas Neverwinter, and Victor. Absolutely go check all of them out. They're all wonderful, happy people that are helping to refill your heart battery, guys. And go do that.
Yeah, Promise Tree is on alternating Sundays at 12 p.m. PST.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Jess, and thanks. Talking to us about Promise Tree. It was really, like, it's so nice to just hear somebody gush about something that makes them feel so good, and, like, I feel good just listening to you talk about how good the show makes you feel. It's been really nice.
Yeah, thanks for having me on and inviting me and talking with me about it, and I'm glad that you guys also had, like, excitement for Ryutama and stuff like that. Like,
we love Ryutama in this house, yes. Mm-hmm. If people want to talk to you about Ryutama or Kingdom Hearts or, you know, join your fan club, how can they do that?
So I'm Jess, or go_JG on Twitter and Twitch. I love to gush about things, so feel free to join my Twitter if you want to have some gushing, or feel free to join my Twitch if you want to actively gush with me, because, oh gosh, I will stop any game I am playing when I'm streaming. To do that. But yeah, I stream on Twitch generally every, like, Monday, Thursday, Saturday. I play in a few different games right now. Ooh, right now I'm playing Honey Heist every Sunday at 12 p.m. EST on Katie Face's channel. So that's another, like, just fun, like, me filling myself, my my life with fun games, because that's what I want. But yeah, and I'm absolutely doing a Kingdom Hearts playthrough right now too. So yeah, if you want to talk Kingdom Hearts, do that with me on Twitch. Thanks.
Thank you to Jess for spreading the good news of wholesome games, Jeff for writing the music with me, and you, the audience. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you did enjoy it, or have a creator in mind that we should contact for future episodes, you can tweet us at TooManyRPGs, or you can contact Lauren at JL_NiceGirl,
or Ethan at SuperRobotBear. If you liked this episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher, and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us spread the show to new people.
Gosh, there's just too many RPGs. But at least that means we can keep on talking to people.
Oh, that's cute! I like that.